This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Best of the Drive. Catch up on the show here every day or listen weekdays 2 to 6 on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Here's today's Best of the Drive.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You're listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the Odyssey app. Coming up in about 30 minutes, we'll be joined by the Hall of Fame voice of the Kansas City Royals, Denny Matthews, will be on the show here coming up in about 30 minutes. We'll also be joined by Rex Hudler at the top of the next hour at 3 o'clock. Royals television broadcaster Rex Hudler will join us on the show today. Bink will also be in studio today for his usual Tuesday appearance. You're listening to The Drive, 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, Odyssey app, all of that good stuff. As I look outside today and I look at this weather, it's very gloomy, it's very rainy. I'm not in the mood to start with the Royals today. I don't want to bring you down. I'm in a good mood today. We've got a lot of time to talk about the Kansas City Chiefs, and we will do so in today's show. But where I would like to start today's show is Rob and I saw Top Gun Maverick yesterday. And let me tell you this. I don't know what you've got planned today or tomorrow, but cancel those plans to go see this movie. This was a summer blockbuster masterpiece. Some of the best visuals, energy, cinematography that I can remember at the movie theater. Now, I was fortunate enough to see it yesterday with Rob at the IMAX theater. I don't know how your financial situation is, but if you got the extra coin to spend, go see it in the IMAX. The sights, the sounds, the planes, the missiles. Top notch. I can't give Top Gun Maverick more of a seal of approval than I currently am. A phenomenal summer blockbuster. To give you a comparison to the movie, I love the Rocky series. Seen them all, can quote them from start to finish. Love the Rocky series. I was really curious to see how they were going to do Creed. How they were going to make Creed relatable to a new audience. And boy, did they pull it off. Top Gun Maverick is basically the Creed version of the Rocky series. It plays off the nostalgia very well. You've got a great young actor in Miles Teller who does a fantastic job in his role. Two thumbs up. Bravissimo. I highly encourage you to go see Top Gun Maverick. It's going to make like $300 million this weekend at the box office. Whatever you were doing tonight, cancel your plans. Hire a babysitter and go see Top Gun Maverick.
I mean, this movie was just incredible. Listen, I thought at times, and I love Top Gun 1, it may have leaned a little heavy in the nostalgia, but who cares? Top Gun 1 is amazing. Lean into the nostalgia all you want. This was a picture-perfect summer film. This is going to do a Marvel film number on weekend one, which is just insane. Tom Cruise is exceptional. Miles Teller is exceptional. Jennifer Connelly's character serves no purpose, but she's in the movie, so that's good for her.
She was great to look at in the movie, though.
She served her role. Hey, go be in there. Go be a hot old white lady. That's her job. She nailed it. This movie, it got an A- for me, mostly because Jennifer Connelly's storyline is totally useless. But you know what? Outside of that, perfect movie. I agree with you. See it in IMAX. If you can. If you can, see this in IMAX, because it just, there are moments where the visuals are incredible. And I didn't realize how many stars this thing was going to have. Like, I kind of didn't know John Hamm was going to be in it. He was great. Just cannot speak highly enough about Top Gun 2 Maverick.
This is the thing I was thinking as I was watching the movie yesterday. Tom Cruise is a movie star. You know how when you see an athlete or a musician and they just have that aura about them? They're a rock star. They are one of God's chosen people that have been put on this earth to play quarterback or put on this earth to be the star point guard. Tom Cruise is that person on the television screen, on the big screen. He is a movie star. We don't make movie stars like that anymore. Rob, I don't know if it's your Marvel movies that now everybody just aspires to be Nighthawk or whatever hell character they've created, or Ant-Man, or all these other foolish characters they've created. Tom Cruise is a movie star. He takes command of every scene that he is in. He still looks the same. Not a gray hair on him. This movie was amazing. All I could tell you to do is go watch it. Someone on the text line says, if you never saw the first Top Gun, can you watch this one and enjoy it? Yes. Some of the things you won't get, but I don't know how you can be a red-blooded American and not appreciate this movie. It was phenomenal. Top Gun Maverick, two thumbs up from the drive. I'm not going to give any spoilers. Two thumbs up, though. Rob, who's the most recent new movie star?
And this can't be a Marvel person,
no,
correct?
So they cannot be a superhero.
So, like, Tom Holland doesn't count.
No, I would not count Tom Holland. Because I think Marvel's made a few of those people. Like, Chris Pine, I would put in that. Chris Hemsworth. But they've all just played Marvel characters. Like, Leonardo DiCaprio is a movie star. He is somebody that will get you to go to the movie theater. He is somebody that just radiates, I am a movie star. I carry myself as a movie star. Who is that person? Who's the new school movie star?
This is going to sound weird. Is it The Rock? Is The Rock the guy now? But can you be a movie star when you have so many duds like Skyscraper or Rampage? Those aren't duds. They're nothing movies. Tom Cruise doesn't do nothing movies. Tom Cruise is a draw with whatever film he does. Everyone knew San Andreas was going to be a perfect FX It's a Sunday Nap Day movie. But if it's not The Rock, then who is it? And I can easily see The Rock not counting because he's going to play a DC hero. So that's a hero again.
That's our answer.
It's not good, but it's the answer I got.
We just don't make Tom Cruises anymore. We just stopped. Someone said, what about Michael B. Jordan? I don't know if I would consider Michael B. Jordan to be a movie star in this.
Also, he is in a Marvel movie.
He's also a popular actor.
Yeah.
There's a difference between being a popular actor and a movie star. People are saying Leonardo DiCaprio, who's in Titanic in 96. There's no one under the age of 40 that counts as a movie star. Like right now, everyone, the suggestions that people are making, they're all people who are over 40 or 50. Will Smith, Mark Wahlberg. Mark Wahlberg was in the Funky Bunch. He was in the Funky Bunch. There's just no one under the age of 40 we would classify to be a movie star anymore the way that Tom Cruise is. We typically would have started with the Royals today. And Josh Vernier's comments earlier today on Fesco in the Morning, but I much rather had talked about Top Gun for the first 8 minutes of the show or not.
You're telling me Diamondbacks Royals didn't get the blood pumping like an IMAX Top Gun Maverick does?
No, they didn't get the blood pumping. But you know what? We're still going to give you your Royals taste with
We're Where You Want to Be.
Today's Baseball random Royals lineup. I'm going to take you back to May 16th of 1986. Why, you may ask? That is when Top Gun 1, which is now referred to as Top Gun 1, was released in theaters. Mm. When we first got our first taste of Danger Zone.
Oh, my goodness.
Leading off for the Royals in 86. By the way, off a World Series, so good for the Royals. They did not start hot. They lost on this day, fall 16 and 17. But that's neither here nor there. Leading off the center fielder, your guy, Willie Wilson.
Willie Wilson is just everywhere.
He's a full-time Random Royals lineup player.
Willie Wilson is the Royals version of Norm Nixon.
Mm-hmm. Batting second, a name I've never heard before, in right field, Rudy Law.
Rudy Law?
Rudy Law sounds like the guy on MLB 2K that couldn't be Barry Bonds.
Is that Jude Law's pops?
Based on how old Jude Law is, that'd be his kid.
Rudy might be a name that millennials have killed. When's the last time you met somebody named Rudy?
I used to know Rudy. My younger days, but there aren't a lot of Rudys.
Someone asked a question, would you consider Robert Pattinson to be a movie star?
He's Batman.
Good point.
Batting third, man about town, third baseman, George Brett.
Yes. Jorge.
Batting fourth, the second baseman, Frank White.
Hey, Frankie.
Batting fifth, the designated hitter, Jorge Horta.
We have to ask George Brett if he loves Top Gun.
I mean, that's when we take him to.
He has to love Top Gun, right?
Yeah, when we take him to Propos, we'll ask him.
Yeah, he has to.
I mean, he played well this day, so maybe he was focused in before seeing a late movie in Chicago. Batting fifth, or excuse me, sixth, the first baseman, Steve Balboni.
Stevie.
Batting seventh was the left fielder, Lonnie Smith.
Lonnie.
Batting eighth, the catcher, Jamie Quirk.
Lonnie certainly sounds like an older African-American gentleman name, right? There's no chance Lonnie Smith is white.
Let's click on old Lonnie.
Let's look what Lonnie Smith looks like.
Lonnie is not white. You are correct.
Oh, look, I mean, I knew it. Lonnie Smith? Come on now. Lonnie. You're telling me Tim and Jennifer raised their baby Lonnie? Come on now. I knew this wasn't the case. I knew Lonnie Smith was an older African-American gentleman. I knew it.
Batting ninth that day for the Royals, the shortstop, Angel Salazar.
Hey.
And the Royals did lose this day, but Charlie Liebrandt started. He went five, gave up four. He was relieved by Steve Farr as the Royals lost on Top Gun release date at Comiskey 4-2. The game lasted 2 hours, 41 minutes.
Yeah, George had to get out of there to go see Top Gun. He had to go leave. I'm out of here. I don't know. I'm gone. Thanks.
He was probably mad he didn't DH. Couldn't get out of there faster.
Yeah, I'm out of here. Thank you.
I had to break a sweat today.
I would love to get George Brett's thoughts on the first Top Gun movie. I would love to do that. Can we make that happen?
I was like to ask, hey, where'd you see it? And when he says Chicago, I'm going to laugh.
Yeah, no, we need to have him on. No, we have to have him on.
We also just need to have Willie Wilson on just because we talk about Willie Wilson every day on this show.
Because he's a phenomenal Kansas City.
I have no issue with him. I'm just saying he comes up every day in Royals random lineup.
Yeah, because he played for 20 different Royals teams. How do you not like Willie Wilson? Something's wrong with you if you don't like Willie Wilson. Two-time All-Star, World Series champion, Gold Glove, two-time Silver Slugger winner, led the American League in stolen bases in 1979. How can you not love Willie Wilson? Switch hitter. Willie Wilson's just a solid baseball player. Just all-around swell guy.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison. Catch Hall of Famer Denny Matthews every Monday at 3.
Hi, Carrington. Doing fine. Thank you. Look forward to next week.
On your home for Royals baseball, 610 Sports Radio. It's time for another edition of Carrington's Hypothetical Button Game. So we're asking you, Kansas City, would you press the button?
Coming up in 15 minutes, we'll be joined in studio by Jay Binkley. We'll talk some football with our guy, Bink. But today's hypothetical button game includes two high draft picks for the Chiefs. Now, the Chiefs are counting on a contribution from both of these individuals. They could certainly use the boost and some more explosiveness in the running game with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. This team doesn't have a true number one wide receiver and could certainly use a major step forward from Mecole Hardman. If I could turn one of these players into a Pro Bowl player, and the other player just simply stays how they've been so far in their career, are you pressing the button for Clyde Edwards-Helaire to turn into the Pro Bowler or Mecole Hardman? I'm going to press the button for Clyde Edwards-Helaire for this reason. Now, I understand positional value and that wide receiver has become a more valuable position than running back. But on this team, they've got four options. If Mecole Hardman is a 700-yard receiver this year, that's not the worst thing that can happen. Now, you probably need Juju Smith-Schuster to step up in that scenario, or Marquez Valdez-Scantling to step up, or you need the rookie Sky Moore to have a really good year. But this team can still be perfectly fine in the passing game if Mecole Hardman doesn't take a step forward. If they got a step forward where you now couple what we believe to be a top 10 passing game in the league with some explosiveness and trust out of the backfield, I think it really opens things up for this offense. One thing that I don't like is we talk a lot how the Chiefs don't run the ball and they don't use their running backs. They do. Their running backs just haven't been very good. It's not like we can cry a whole lot about usage with Clyde Edwards-Helaire or last year with Darrell Williams. They tried to use both of those guys. They just weren't explosive. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire in his career has simply not been an explosive running back. He hasn't been a guy that you think on a second and five can turn it into a first and 10, but the first and 10 is 40 yards down the field. That just hasn't been the kind of player that he's been. So if you're telling me I could get one of the two options, and I could turn Clyde Edwards-Helaire into a Pro Bowl caliber running back, or I could turn Mecole Hardman, I think I'd pick Clyde Edwards-Helaire because I think he changes their offense more. I think right now they have a below average running back room. If they could change that and they could have a really strong running back room, and we then trust Mahomes to be able to figure it out offensively with the other wide receivers, I think they're in a really, really good spot. I'd pick Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
See, I'd take Mecole Hardman. Now, I know that's not shocking to literally anyone in my thoughts on running back, but the harsh reality is the Chiefs are a pass-first offense. We've pulled the numbers. They're basically like 58-42, but those numbers aren't clean. So we'll do 60-40. They are a pass-first team in the National Football League. So a dynamic running back can't affect the game the same way a dynamic receiver can in their offense based on the structure of their offense. And maybe this is just the way it works in my brain, but when you say take a step forward, in my head, Mecole Hardman goes from jet sweep Tavon Austin type to a diet Tyreek Hill, the player we thought Mecole Hardman could be. If you have diet Tyreek Hill on this team, and I get you'll never get real Tyreek Hill back on this team because that's an incredible talent. But if you have that version, you now have a similar offense to last year's weaponry with an improved number two wideout and an improved number three wideout. And this offense goes from, man, they're kind of sluggish, do they have a number one? Can they get it done, to dynamic in the blink of an eye? Clyde Edwards-Helaire becoming Kareem Hunt makes them better. It doesn't make them wow. That's why I'm picking Mecole Hardman.
Text line 913-576-7610. C. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is bad, but Pacheco is good. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is not bad. He's just normal. That's what he is. He's just normal. Like, you can look at his numbers. He is not a bad running back by any means. He averaged 4.3 yards per carry last season, 4.4 as a rookie. He can catch the ball a little bit out of the backfield. They don't really use him nearly enough. He just doesn't have any explosiveness. Last year, Clyde Edwards-Helaire had 119 carries. Not one of them went for 20 yards. Not one last season. He's just not dynamic or explosive in really any way. I don't think that he is a bad running back. He's not. He's just average. Which, if you spend a first-round pick on a running back, you expect him to be above average. But I mean, Pacheco last year rushed for 3.9 yards per carry last year. He was a seventh round pick. I mean, calling him good to me feels like a stretch.
I mean, Pacheco is the epitome of the backup quarterback syndrome. I don't like our starter, so our backup must be amazing, sight unseen.
Yeah, he ran for 3.9 yards per carry last year. I'm the good's really, really pushing it.
Against a vaunted Nebraska defense, though.
Yeah, really, really pushing it.
The Illini shut him down.
Text line 913-576-7610. Would you take Will Fuller on a one-year, $4 million deal? Absolutely not. Let's go to the phone lines, 913-576-7610. Jerry, if you could turn one of these players into a Pro Bowler, would you pick Mecole Hardman or Clyde Edwards-Helaire?
Clyde, and it's not even close, because here's the deal. We all know that Clyde Edwards-Helaire, if he turns into an all-proler, is making it as a running back. If Mecole Hardman makes an all-pro team, well, he could be doing it as a special teams guy, and we really don't need another special teams guy making all-pro. Just, if you were going to ask me this question, if the Chiefs and the Bengals swap their number one wide receiver, Ja'Marr Chase and Ty Hill, Bengals still probably beat the Chiefs in that championship game. If you swap Clyde Edwards-Helaire with Joe Mixon, the Chiefs probably beat the Bengals in that. I know, like, running backs become this weird, undervalued position that you don't really need it until you need it. And it's Kansas City with a dual-threat running back that can get you 1,000 yards in the backfield and can get you 800 yards through the air is far more valuable than Mecole Hardman potentially being a 1,000-yard wide receiver, and then he flames out the next year. I would rather have Clyde be that all-pro player than Mecole Hardman, because the Chiefs have someone that could be an all-pro player in Juju Smith-Schuster, and it's not just me saying that. That's what everyone in the league thinks. That's why the Chiefs made the move to get him.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Jerry. I'd be really surprised if Juju Smith-Schuster turned out to that. Like, I'd personally be surprised if he did. I think he's going to be a fine player. I don't know if he's going to take that level of leap this year, but I do like Juju. Text line 913-576-7610. CDOT, Clyde Edwards-Helaire hasn't been used properly, so therefore, how can we honestly evaluate him? I don't believe that to be the case. If Andy Reid doesn't know how to use a player like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, then what are we doing here? I think the problem is much more with the player than with how they've been using him. Because you know what? They seem to use Darrell Williams properly last year. They seem to use Damian Williams properly when they had him. Think of every running back the Chiefs have had. We think Clyde Edwards-Helaire is the first one they don't know how to use right. They know how to use Spencer Ware. They know how to use Charkandrick West. They know how to use Kareem Hunt. It's just something about Clyde Edwards-Helaire's skill set that Andy Reid hasn't been able to unlock and figure out. I think this is who he is. What I think happened with Clyde Edwards-Helaire is just an expectation gap. He's a third or fourth round pick that they drafted in round one. And I think in some ways they know that too. That's how they operate to me. They operate like a team that kind of knows that. But again, I don't think that he is bad. I think he's just average. I think he is just there. There's nothing special about Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He doesn't do anything at an elite level. He's not a game-changing player, not a game-breaking player. He's just average. I would take him to be the Pro Bowler, though, if I could press the button. Bill, you caught into the drive. How's it going, my man?
Hey, it's going good. This is a slam dunk. It's Edwards-Helaire, because the better he is, the more he's on the field, the less our defense is on the field. I mean, it's that simple. He's going to run the clock. He's going to make yards, first downs. This is an easy pick. That's it.
I appreciate the phone call, Bill. Thank you, man. I like Bill at the end. Bill was like, let me get off here. I made my point. I'm out of here. Text line 913-576-7610. To Rob's point, being a pass-first offense is why we have one ring instead of three. You want to know who's a pass-first offense? Every team in the National Football League. Every team in the NFL last year threw it more times than they ran it. Sometimes you guys on the text line really go between It's 2022. Patrick Mahomes can make a 1,000-yard receiver out of anybody. And then, hey, we should run the ball more. Hey, look, we should run it 500 times a season. It can't be both. It can't be that Pat's going to make all of these guys 1,000-yard receivers and their number two tight end, Jody Fortson, is going to have 750, and they also should be a run-first offense. All of those things cannot happen simultaneously. It is impossible to do so. But every team in the league last year threw it more times than they run it because the rules encourage you to do so.
Maybe I was living under a rock, but I must have missed when the Marty Chiefs just ramrodded the NFL the last couple of years.
And in these conversations, I don't really know what percentage people want the Chiefs to be. They threw it 62% of the time. They ran it 38% of the time. I'd argue they probably run it too much. They probably run too frequently last year. But yeah, their pass run ratio is perfectly fine. It's just whenever they decide to call the running plays, they just need more from the people that are running.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison. Catch Royals broadcaster Rex Hudler every Tuesday at 3 on your home for Royals baseball, 610 Sports Radio.
Earlier today, Vern was on Fesco in the Morning, and he said something that really grabbed my attention. Vern is normally a mild manner, very reasoned, rationed. I like talking baseball with Vern. Listen to what he said earlier today on Fesco in the Morning regarding your Kansas City Royals.
Andrew Benintendi, Hunter Dozier, Whit Merrifield, Brad Keller, Scott Barlow, Michael A. Taylor. Those seven names should be on the block, and it sounds drastic, but you look at the foundation that J.J., Dayton, John Sherman, that they'll be able to build on moving forward. It's not too shabby. Honestly, it's better than where they were to start 2018 or 2019. You're going to have a rotation with a 25-year-old Daniel Lynch, 25-year-old Brady Singer, two guys that you believe could be maybe not number ones, but number two and number three in a championship rotation, and then an offense built around Bobby Witt Jr., MJ Melendez, Vinny Pasquantino, Kyle Isbell. It's a pretty solid foundation. You got middle of the lineup bats, and you got top of the rotation arms. It sounds drastic when I say gut it, but there's no reason with savvy trades, there's no reason why you can't turn it around.
Okay. Now, I don't want to put words into Vern's mouth. We can have Vern on the show and he can speak for himself. But if you're using terms like gut the roster, starting over, ability to turn the roster over, is it a fair question to ask, should the people in charge of putting that roster together also be in charge of gutting the roster? Now, the University of Missouri was in the same situation just a few months ago with its basketball team. I don't think DeConzo Martin's a bad coach. He's fine. You're probably not going to win a championship with DeConzo Martin. You're probably not going to win your conference with DeConzo Martin, but I would never come on here and say that I think DeConzo Martin is a bad basketball coach. He's fine. But this past year for Missouri was really bad. And I think there came a point, hey, we allowed you to assemble this roster. It obviously didn't work. Can we trust you to now go right back in the transfer portal and flip this roster around again? We know the answer that Missouri made. They gave DeConzo Martin $6 million to go find something else to do with his life. Now, again, I'm not trying to put words into Josh Vernier's mouth. But if we think that they should gut the roster, can you allow the people that put this current roster together to be in charge of fixing it? Because gutting this roster, to me, sounds like we have wasted the last 5 years. When the Royals had that final send-off, Hosmer, Kane, Moose, Escobar, everybody was there. You knew that was the curtain call. That was the end of the concert. Now they were going to turn things over. And they have been in that process now for 5 seasons. If we are halfway through that rebuild, or maybe even further, and now we're saying, hey, I mean, it's kind of time for us to make a reset, a restart. These people can't be in charge of it then. It's time to really gut the roster. It's time to really start new, start fresh, start from the beginning. Not just start with the beginning at Carlos Santana. Not just start at the beginning with Adalberto Mondesi. How about the people that have continued to rely on Adalberto Mondesi to be a 2-4 hitter on this team without ever finding an alternative or a second option? Am I off in that thought and that belief that if the Royals are going to sell us on the, hey, we got this one wrong. Hey, our bad. It happens. We misevaluated this thing. It's time to start over and reset the clock. Maybe we need new people resetting the clock.
Everyone Vern mentioned in that cut, Benintendi, Hunter Dozier, Michael A. Taylor, Scott Barlow, whomever he mentioned, Whit Merrifield, they were all guys that are being discussed as being sold as part of a gutting on the roster that the regime in charge of selling them brought them in. You're telling me the person that was in charge that said Hunter Dozier deserves an extension, we're going to buy out his arbitration years, we're going to give him a nice contract, is now in charge of turning around and trying to find value for Hunter Dozier? The same guy that sold me on Michael A. Taylor and then brought him back because he's a gold glove caliber center fielder is now out there trying to sell Michael A. Taylor? It doesn't make any sense. You made the Missouri comparison, and it's a good one. It reminds me of Shane Zinger was the AD at KU. He did a bad job. He hired Charlie Weiss. Horrible hire. He then fired Charlie Weiss and hired David Beatty. And there was talk that he's going to fire David Beatty and bring in a third football coach.
You don't get a third. You don't get three.
You don't get three. You screwed up twice. Goodbye. Good day, sir. It's not those levels of screw-ups with the Royals organization, but you can't say we're rebuilding and then halfway through be like, you know what? This rebuild failed. You don't get three rebuilds, which what the Royals did. They rebuilt once, and they won the World Series. Rebuilt twice, and now we're looking at it going, time to rebuild again. You don't get three. No team in baseball is giving their GM three rebuilds. None. Someone's got to get fired. And if we're going to gut the roster, and you're going to see the Royals on the bottom ticker of ESPN, MLB Network, whatever your choice of trade deadline watch is, and you see Royals send player X to other team, if they're actually doing that, then this offseason we're going to have a serious conversation of the power structure because it can't be in charge.
Does this count as a rebuild because they haven't built anything? Now, maybe we just haven't seen it through enough and this conversation is premature. It's possible. But the first rebuild took a long time. It took 8 years, 9 years. But we eventually got to see the fruit of it. In 13, they had a winning record. They went to the World Series in 2014. They won the World Series in 2015. All right, we had to dismantle it. We broke it down. We're now in year 5 of that. And they're the worst team in the American League. What are we setting their over-under at it next year? 74.5, 75.5? So we could potentially be back in this same place? When I hear terms like gut the roster and it won't be that long to turn things around or turn the roster over, do you trust the people in charge to be the ones to do that? The people that built this roster, that to your point, paid Hunter Dozier, brought in Michael A. Taylor, signed Carlos Santana. Do we trust them to find the next Carlos Santana or what we believe Carlos Santana to be?
Here's the other part of this. Because Vern said in that cut, if they do that, if they gut the roster and they'll have a nice little nest egg, for lack of a better term, to build as a foundation, to start the rebuild because it'd be better now than in 2018. We're about to finish year 4. Of the rebuilds in 2018. And it looks like year 5 or 6 is when you can first start seeing dividends. So if it takes 6 years to build from nothing to hope you're good again, you're going to reset the clock and now what? Add 3 years to the equation? You don't just get to keep resetting the shot clock and saying, well, we have to rebuild again and now we're in a better spot for this rebuild than the last rebuild. Stop rebuilding at a certain point and just build. Just have some brick and mortar. They don't have any of that. Bobby Witt's the closest thing they have to it. Brady Singer's the closest thing they have to it. And those guys currently have flaws in their game. They don't have, me and you argued a lot about the draft, about brick and mortar versus pillar guys. The Royals have neither. None. And the people in charge are now saying we got to restart to get more of both. That doesn't seem like a good system.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.